at rnz.com.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. And it's a very, very good morning here in the 09. Hey, just quick update on the PGA. Ryan Fox is equal 12 through 17, 3 under. So really having a great round. He's having a good bit of luck at the moment. Foxy is. So I know his dad will be really, really proud speaking to him last week. Anyway, we might as well give a big shout out to Father Ted's sponsorship of this part. So, Father Ted's Original Irish Pub. They're based at 1 Wellesley Street in the Auckland CBD. They have a selection of crafts, local and international draft beers on tap. A selection of bottled beers, fine wines, good spirit. I'm hoping that this... I'm a bit concerned because this mic isn't working. Bottle beer, fine wines, good spirits, great food, music Wednesday night through to Saturday night. So call them on 09377 3142. You can email them fatherteds@hotmail.com. Wow, it is a been a good round of Super Rugby. Here to talk to us, as he does every Saturday, my good friend, tall friend, former All Black AJ Whitten. Good morning.
Good morning, Peggy. It sounds as though with that mic, you might need one or two of those spirits a bit early, son, to get it going.
Well, I think, you know, well, I've been, you know, I haven't been well during the week, so I've just recovered, and, you know, I don't need to take concrete pills. Concrete pills are built into the body, AJ. I'm letting you know that right now.
Thanks for the tip, buddy.
Anyway, we might as well talk about last night. Well, Hurricanes got out of jail, 24 versus Highlanders 20. I have to say, it was a cracking game. Tava Naiwe, we speak about him for the Highlanders all the time, and big Fabian Holland. But then I looked at the Hurricanes, and Love and Proctor, very good. Gallagher, but Kariffi really made a difference when he came on.
Yeah, it was a funny game because the Highlanders came out of the gate. They were roaring and deservedly took the lead. But another performance, I guess, from the Hurricanes. They were either right on fire and doing the job up front and delivering out wide, or they just seemed to scrape through and lose their way. Yeah, a few mistakes. I thought there was a bit scrappy at times, not looking after that pill. And the Highlanders, well, they're just fighting for a bit of pride, and they showed that. And you mentioned... obviously, a couple of players that we were covered have otherwise been a real standout. But boy, what a couple of great tries! Low, of course, with that brilliant try just before halftime.
Yeah, fantastic.
They certainly got the capabilities. It's just they just can't seem to put it together for 80 minutes. And poor Jamie Joseph and his staff, they'll have to go back to the drawing board to say, guys, you know, it's not a 70-minute, 60-minute game. It's a full 85 odd. So, yep, you named a couple of good players. I think Cam Roygaard was outstanding. Very, very difficult to hold back near the line. And as I said, Cariffy, certainly damaging due to injury, come off the bench pretty early, but he certainly made a difference. And misjudged the line out. You know, they got out of jail with a minute to go, and because the Highlanders turned it over and they scored.
Yeah, well, when you look at it, like, Kariffi is looking more and more like he will be part of that announcement at the end of Super Rugby. I'd be absolutely surprised if he's not in that side.
Well, he'll be in the mix.
Anyway, he would have to be in that squad. He definitely would. Anyway, we move on to Sydney. Crusaders 48, Waratahs 33. Big concerns with no Will Jordan, but Johnny McNichol really fitted well into that fullback slot for the Crusaders. I have to say, some of the loose forwards have been, to me, I think, have been really good. Tom Christie has been quite underrated in his work race, but Grace and Leah Willey, they've been fantastic.
They've got a pretty settled back row there now. Quentin Stray's back in the second row with Shafflon there. So, look, again, I thought they started extremely well, 31-7 at half-time. The game was really over from my point of view. I think the Waratahs were just playing with a bit of pride in that second half and at home. The slippery conditions, no doubt, had their fair share of rain. But they're just too clinical. And you mentioned that loose forward trio played well. I thought the combination of Hoth and Rahana was one of its best. Some nice kicking from Rahana. But you mentioned McNichol. I think he's been out of action for about 3 to 4 months. And for him to come back and slot in and play a seamish role in that back line, yeah, well done to him. But a good win. Probably Mr. Penny might be a wee bit disappointed with the amount of points in the second half.
Yeah, well, missing out on that bonus point really that could become crucial.
Yeah, you've just got to tie it up when you're that far ahead, and they let them out of jail a bit. So, look, you're over there, you come home on the plane, they've had the old Waratah heebie-jeebies there for a while, so to come away with a victory, he'll be pretty delighted with that on the way home in the plane.
Anyway, we move on to the Saturday games, and of course the early one in Fiji, the Drua versus the Force. Now, this one, to me, I think the Drua will want to get a win just to end the season, as we get towards the end of the season, just to give themselves a bit of pride.
Yep, no doubt. I got it wrong last week. I thought they might upset the teams at home. They've got to try and build home advantage just like a bit like a fortress. So, Fiji Drua on the Force. They're only playing for pride, both of them. I see Simon Cron from the Force have made quite a few switches. And poor old Mr. Jackson with Fiji Drua. I know he's made a few more changes too, just to try and get the right combination at home. Give something for the fans to cheer about as they near the end of their Super Rugby campaign, and try and finish on a high note. So it should be plenty of action and plenty of movement.
Absolutely, and then we go to the big one at North Harbour Stadium tonight. Very crucial for both sides. Win, you probably, and lose, well, it's probably looking towards finishing off your games and looking towards next season. Moana Pacifica versus the Blues. This is huge. Now, I've loved the way Moana Pacifica have played this year. I think Artie Sevier's been brilliant, but I just cannot see the Blues losing this, AJ.
Well, as I say, you know, it used to be like the old NPC, the Battle of the Bridge, Auckland Harbour. Well, this is very similar with the Blues against Moana Pacifica. So, look, a huge game. Yeah, this will be the defining game of the round. There's no doubt about it. The Blues coming a couple of wins in the trot. So they win this, Piggy, and they've certainly cemented their spot in the top six. They've got a bye the following week. And then they've got the Waratahs at home at Eden Park, so, and they're not travelling the best at the moment. So you'd think that they'd be right. They've got Caleb Clark back. He'll add some grunt on the wing there. A pretty settled forward pack. I say Bere's got the nod with Tui Pulutu, so, and Ta'avale starting. So that's how serious they're taking the game. Hopefully there's a big crowd out there with this beautiful weather. I see the Moana Pacifica have got, obviously, their striking point in Artie Sevier. He'll be huge in his leadership. I see they've kept the same loose forward combination. But they've got Pellegrini back, which I like, that number 10. I think he's deserved a spot ahead of Garden Basher. He's off the bench. So he'll bring a bit of variance to the game. And he's quite a confident little player, not afraid to have a go. So the Blues would be favourites. But how desperate are Moana Pacifica? They know that this game will have a huge impact on their season. They'll go into the top six if they win it. So, look, it's going to be a tight one. For desperation, let's see Moana Pacifica if they can get up. That's who I'll be looking at.
And, of course, the big one in Australia will be the Brumbies versus the Reds. Now, the Brumbies at home, really hard to beat in Canberra, but this Red side, you know, they've never really given in at all. You know, this one's a tight one to call. Brumbies, really, if they win this, they'll go to the top of the table. You know, they've really, you know, I think they've really flown under the radar this year.
Yeah, no, the Brumbies at home. But, you know, the Reds are comfortably, well, reasonably comfortably in that top four or five. So I think this is your top six is smallly sorted out, or your top five anyway. It's that last spot between Hurricanes, Blues, Moana Pacifica. That's what's made it quite exciting to see who's going to grab it. So the Brumbies at home. I know the Reds are going particularly well. Les Kiss, obviously, the Australian coach in waiting. He's made a few changes there, but the Brumbies at home, yeah, I just think they might have a bit too much, especially with their back three, Tool, Wright and Muirhead. If they get it right, some nice pull, I think they'll just have a bit too much class for them.
Absolutely, and then we have a look across what's happening else in other rugby, obviously the club community game, or I call it club rugby. Some of the lovely people down in Wellington call it the community game, but we also have a women's international, the Black Ferns versus Canada. Black Ferns were very dominant against the Wallaroos, and this one last year, Canada was able to cause an upset and beat the Black Ferns. I think it'll be a tight match, but I think the Black Ferns should be too good for Canada.
Yeah, they've gone a bit under the radar. They're playing down south, of course, in Christchurch, so hope the weather's good down there to get a bit of a crowd. I think there's a bit of payback here. I can't see Canada beating them twice in a row, so I think the Black Ferns, there's some big stuff ahead of them. Start to make your mark. You're playing for positions and the team, the squad going to the World Cup, so although they should be nasty out there today and be dominant. You'd like to hope so anyway.
Absolutely, and of course, just to end things off, congratulations to the first New Zealand under 85 kgs team that took on Sri Lanka. There are a lot of Auckland boys, a guy I know who's a Lizard and a first international from the Lizards, Tom Rawlins, a very, very good prop. I have to say, you know, really enjoyable rugby, and they've really done rugby New Zealand proud, spreading the gospel of rugby to the world.
Oh, I know, great to see another team in black, and especially in this sort of weight division. As we always said, there's some very talented men out there who haven't had an opportunity to show their wares due to the dynamics of rugby now in New Zealand. So, great. It keeps them involved in the game. As I said, there's a lot of talent out there, and to see them represent their country, great stuff. And I'm sure, hopefully, this grade just keeps getting better and better, and we see more opportunities for these boys to stay in the game.
Yeah, well, I think it's very, very important. And just to let you know, and I said this to you off here, you know, is we hope it improves the grade, because I can tell you, and you might laugh, I once played under 85's restricted rugby, and believe me...
No.
Yeah, I thought you would laugh. Yeah, I was waiting for that.
There's no way you'd be playing proper, but I tell you what, I don't know, under 85, is that under 18 inches 5?
No, it was 85 kgs. It was, I'm going to get stuck into you now. I first played about 28 years ago for the Lizards, and I was actually 69 kgs back then. Jeez, what's happened now?
I tell you what, I know what's happened, son. You've been eating out of the trough.
I was waiting for that. I opened myself for that one up, didn't I? Open there, but you look at it like when I played, there were about 30 teams. Now there's about 8 to 10 teams in the Auckland region. About, you know, to me, there's got to be concerns. I don't know whether kids are interested in it anymore. You know, whether it's a generational thing, but you know, it's always been a great grade.
Yeah, well, long may it continue too. So we can only wish him all the best. And I tell you, I've just got a quick text. You've got a new fan out there who's tuned in to Planet FM, and that's Fenton. She's listening. She's a real blue supporter. She's told me, don't you pick the opposition. She's just given me a serve. So, Fenton, you're listening? Well, let's see what happens this afternoon.
That will go. That shall be. Fenton, welcome to the craziness that's a sports weekender, and not only rugby advice, but life advice with OJ Wheaton.
Good man.
Hey, you have a great weekend.
Yeah, you look after yourself, mate.
Yeah, and stand, and I'll be standing tall, mate.
Yeah, Mate, use that crate as you usually do.
Bye-bye. AJ Wheaton's always got to get the last word in, doesn't he? Anyway, so we're going to talk a bit about club rugby with Stephen Harris next. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender on Planet FM, and this Club Rugby segment is brought to you by Force Electrical. At Force Electrical, they are a team of professionals dedicated to providing high quality electrical services for both residential and commercial clients. With over 10 years experience, they pride themselves on being reliable and thorough and taking great care in ensuring that their clients' needs are met in a timely and efficient manner. So give Force Electrical a call. Give them your business. The number is 021-628-341, or you can email them nick@forceelectrical.co.nz. Well, that's getting the voice slowly back together, even though I'm, you know, even though I've taken those concrete pills, as they say. And breaks, by the way, I did do the full number. Anyway, here to talk to us, we do the Club Rugby segment. Stephen Harris, good morning to you.
Now, good morning, sir, and good morning to your listeners. Always a privilege and a pleasure to be on your award-winning show.
Send me through your bank account details. I'll send the $20 through. But, hey, it's always great having a chat to you, Stephen. We had a bit of a laugh last week, and there were a few texts flying after Saturday. But hey, that was last week. We're into this week. So we're going to kick it off. Northland, Hora Hora versus Ngāti Hinemoriwa. Mid-Northern versus Kama, Hikarangi versus Kerikeri, Wellsford Haumetea versus Old Boys Marist. Now, just to mention on this, and I was just mentioning off here, Mike Taveni Jr., will be playing his 300th game for Haumetea, because he's been part of that club since he's a wee kid. I know his mum, Raywin, really well, real good lady, and his father, the late Mike Taveni, was a real character. He could tackle anything, but just a real good bloke and a great family they are, and they've been up there for a number of years. So Mike, all the best of luck. So what's your thoughts on those games?
I've just got to mention 300 club games is crazy. Does that mean you get another blazer as well? Do you normally get a blazer after 100 games
and
200 games? But that's some sort of longevity, boy. To have knocked out 100 games, I reckon that's probably may have spanned over a 20-year career.
Yeah, it is. It is. It would have been. And he's, I got a message last time. I thought, well, we might as well add that to there. But just looking at those games in Northland, what's your thoughts on those one? The first one, Hora Hora versus Ngāti Hinemoriwa.
Ngāti Hinemoriwa sitting in third place and on 22 points. Hora Hora. Yeah, they're sitting in eighth place on 8 points, struggling a little bit as well. So you've got to go for the visitors today. I think Ngāti Hine would be too strong.
Absolutely. Mid-Northern versus Carmo. Well, you'd have to go Mid-Northern here, wouldn't you?
Yeah, it should be an interesting contest. 1 versus 5, the Northern are the only unbeaten team this particular season. They have got a lot of good players, a lot of guys who are part of the HP Academy, who will be fronting up for Northland against Auckland on the 28th of May. That game, I think, is going to be played out at University Oval in the University Rugby Club in the evening, so one to watch out for. But Mid-Northern, I think, they'll keep that role going and be too strong for what will be a very plucky Tamo side.
Hikarangi versus Kerikeri. Wow, you'd have to. Kerikeri have been big improvers this year.
Yeah, they have. Still sitting outside that top four, though, but it's important that they get the win today, and I think they'll travel away and probably be too strong for a Hikarangi side that's struggling.
Welsford's Omatea versus Old Boys Maris. Well, I hope, I hope that Welsford Omatea wins, but you'd probably Boys Maris will be just too good.
Yeah, I think so. And once again, a few boys that are involved in the HP program, a couple of boys pushing for Northland places. I think they'll be too strong. They'll want to stay in contact with Mid Northern.
Absolutely. And then we move on to North Harbour, and hopefully there's been no defaults this week. But Helensville versus Maharangi.
Yeah, this is the battle of the rurals, isn't it?
It is indeed. And and basically this one, I think maybe Helensville might get this.
Definitely a toss of a coin, and it might just come down to the home, whoever's playing at home. So on that basis, I'd have to go for Helensville as well.
Silverdale versus ECB, East Coast Bays. You'd have to say East Coast Bays in this one.
Yeah, 5v6. I think East Coast Bays have been slowly improving. Just the 2 losses, Silverdale with 4 losses. I think I'd have to go for East Coast Bays.
Okay, and then we go Kumu versus Takapuna. Obviously, you might as well just say Takapuna probably won that one easily, and no disrespect to Kumu. North Shore versus Northcote. Now, this will be an interesting one.
Yeah, once again, if Mid-Northern are flying the flagship in Northland, it's definitely North Shore showing flying the flag for North Harbour Rugby. They're unbeaten, and I think after that today, they'll still be unbeaten.
Absolutely. And then we move on to Auckland Women's Premier Division, Maris versus Papatoa. Now, Maris got a win last week, and of course, I think they'll just be too strong for Papatoa.
Yeah, I would suggest though. Marist both got similar records. They both played four. Both have had 3 losses, 1 win. But Marist, by virtue of it's a home game for them.
Yes, it is.
As well, I would say Marist.
Of course, Ponsonby travel to Padamahoe. Now, Padamahoe really don't have competed very, very well in this women's division. But I think Ponsonby far too good.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Unbeaten this year, Ponsonby, along with Manurewa, so I go for Ponsonby.
Silverdale versus North Shore in a bit of a over-the-bridge derby. Now, Silverdale, really good to see them up there, but I think the Shore are just too good.
Yeah, no, I'd have to agree with you.
Now, this one probably is one of the closest ones to call. College Rifles versus Mangarewa.
Yeah, that's been played at
Rifle. Yeah.
Rifles, Manurewa are unbeaten this year. College Rifles, plenty to play for. Man, on such a beautiful day on the 09, I think I might go for College Rifles, the home side.
Absolutely. Then we move to Auckland Men's Premier Rugby, and we will leave our 2 clubs to the end. I'm even going to let you have the last call in the Battle of the West, but we'll start it off. University versus Papatoa. I think University just far too good. Stephen, what's your thoughts?
Yeah, no, I'd have to go along with that. In fact, there was a surprising effort from University, and it took a golden point penalty from Jack Strawn that basically got Grammar Tech across the line against University. They put up a heck of a fight against a very, very good G-Tech side. Papatoetoe actually displayed a little bit of courage against Waitemata last weekend to basically keep to limit that scoreline at the end of the day, but they'll find Varsity at home too much of a handful.
Okay, so we move on to College Rifles versus Ponsonby. Ponsonby probably still look like the team to beat, and I just feel they've just said, this is ironic, just too many guns for College Rifles.
Yeah. I love your play on words there. Very, very good. Yeah, I'd have to go along with Ponsonby as well. College Rifles struggling a little this year.
Then we move on. This one, I think, really is the match of the round, and even though our teams probably will say our team's the match of the round, but if we look at the overall, Grammar Tech versus Pakuranga. Pakuranga have been, you know, they've been flying high. They really pushed Ponsonby the other week. Grammar Tech have looked, you know, got that sneaky win against Varsity, but this one really is a real tough one to call. You'd have to favour G-Tech at home, but Pakuranga, they just keep on surprising.
Yeah, they do. G-Tech will have to put on a much more improved in performance after last weekend. I know talking to one of their players whom I'm fortunate enough to work with, he said that even though they won, it kind of felt like it was a below par performance from Grammar Tech. So I think Grammar Tech gets the job done, but this could be the closest game of the round.
Anyway, we move on. Eden versus Marist. Now, I suspect I know which way you're heading, but I will have a response. I'll let you go first.
Boy, Eden, that was a plucky, you'd have to say, a very plucky performance against Suburbs last weekend in a game that could have gone either way. Just looking at the records, only a point or two separating these sides, just bonus points that Marist have actually picked up along the way. You know what? I'm going to go for the miracle. I'm going to go for Eden.
Ooh.
To tip up Marist.
Okay, my response is at around 4:20, 4:25 in the Sandringham area, there will be white smoke coming out. Now, it won't be because there's a new Pope, but Jeff Pope, my old mate, the life member, I hope he's here having a beer, and it won't be because someone's vaping, because the white smoke will bring on the miracle at Gribblehurst Park with Eden beating Marist. Anyway, your mob travel to Suburbs versus Waitemata. I have to say, Suburbs, they've been coming close, and I had the pleasure of entertaining these Suburbs old boys. They won the raffles off the field, but we won the game on the field. So we, you know, I suppose we'll call it even. But really, this one I think is going to be a lot tighter than people suspect. I think, you know, you may not like what I'm going to say, Stephen. I'm actually going to go for a Suburbs win.
Yeah, mate, being a home ground advantage plays a big part, and I've got to say, I don't think the coach John Tuangafasi may have been too impressed with his charges this week. They certainly would have got a rocket. There'll be a bit of a revenge factor from last year, but you know, like I think Suburbs have got a lot of good personnel in their side. Even though they put reasonably light through the type five, they've actually got some quality, and they will be up for this game, because if there's no other game that you win during the season, it's the title for the Battle of the West. So here I say it, I'm going to have to go for the home side.
Absolutely. Then we go to Counties Manukau. Now, Pakuranga are now gone, so we don't really have any more buys anymore. Bombay versus Ardmore. Now, I'm picking Bombay in this, but I'm not by much, because I think Ardmore are really improved.
Yeah, they have. I mean, so the table suggests it with their four-loss, two-win record, and based on the back of that, they've obviously picked up a lot of bonus points with the style that they've played rugby. I think you probably go for Ardmore Marist.
Absolutely. This one's a cracker in Counties. Petamahui versus Karaka. Now, I have to say, like, Karaka have always dominated. In recent years, Karaka have dominated Counties Manukau rugby, but Petamahui won it last year. And plus, my good friend Dale Budge, I want to keep in good with him just in case I need a favour off him. So I'm actually going to go for Petamahui, but not by much.
Boy, I must admit, I haven't seen the team's sheets of these two sides. Boy, that'd be a great contest if you're in that area just to head out to. Those are your two best sides. There's probably a stack of Counties Monaco, well, potentially Counties Monaco players running around for both sides. I just got to go for the home side. I really do. But they've only had that one loss this season, haven't they, Pitamahoe? And was that to Karaka?
That was to Karaka. So,
yes. And that was at Pitamahoe's home ground. So that would be a turn-up if the visitors win, but I'm going to go for the home side.
Absolutely. Pukekohe versus Mangarewa. You know, Mangarewa, they're really struggling this year, but Pukekohe have really been quite form. And, you know, it's a shame to see, because Mangarewa is a club with a lot of good ex-All Blacks, a lot of good Counties Manukau players. I can't see them turning around the season they're having against Pukekohe today, Stephen.
No, not at all. And once again, Pukekohe the home side today. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah, I think the travel down the motorway is probably going to come up a little bit short for Manurewa today. So yeah, definitely the home side.
Okay, hey, just before that, you agree on that. Hey, just a quick update on the PGA Championship. Ryan Fox has finished his round at 4 under, even par. He has tied for 6. So he is having a great run. Talking to his dad, he was just said he just needs to win this tournament. And and you can just see, isn't that great news?
Oh, fantastic. He's in a hot little bit of form at the moment, isn't it?
He is. He certainly is. And, you know, what was it? It is, you know, when he gets on a roll, he doesn't win any tournament, but he gets his consistency. So yeah, hopefully Piper's plane arrives, because he's supposed to do a sports talk, and that was all done at the last minute with me. So hopefully we'll be able to speak about this. But anyway, Stephen, you'll be off to suburbs today.
Yes, I certainly am, and then I'm hooking up with a very good friend, Rod Cobb, and we're going to head off to the Moana.
Oh, that'll be a cracking game, mate.
Which should be an absolute cracker tonight. The loser of that game
is out.
Pretty much toast, aren't they?
Yeah, they're pretty much, as I said to AJ earlier. But I have to say, it's just one of these weekends where if you're a couch potato and you love sports, it's perfect.
Oh.
You know, you look at it, you've got the Warriors, you've got the Super Rugby, you've got Auckland FC, you've got so much on, you've got a lot of, you've also got the Women's International against Canada, so yeah.
Yeah, it's almost a weekend. You may be seeing the wife or the plus one away for the weekend, you know, on a girl's weekend. Out of the goodness of your heart, but not telling her putting the real excuse behind it, that you're actually going to just sit in front of television and watch sport all weekend.
Yeah, Stephen, what you've just done now is you've got a lot of males into trouble, and and while we had a small female demographic, it's probably going to get lesser after that comment.
Okay, I'm looking at a shovel in the garden, mate.
Yeah, I think so. Hey mate, it's my show. I do the clangers. On that note, man, you have a good weekend. Always enjoy talking to you, and hopefully we'll get to do it again next Saturday.
Not a problem at all, brother.
Please. Thank you very, very much. Stephen Harris, he's usually, as I said, it's usually me doing the clangers round here, but hey, it's always good to have a chat to Steve. Anyway, let's play a bit of music, and then we speak to Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League next. Welcome, everyone, back to the Sports Weekend. And next up, we're going to be speaking to Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. But this segment's brought to you by Douglas Drainage Limited. Every problem has a solution. All solutions have a cost. Minimise the cost with information and technology. Provided information with technology and research. That's what they do at Douglas Drainage. So give them a call. Ben, he's a hell of a good bloke. 0274 838-737. So let's get into it. Big weekend of NRL coming up, especially at 5 p.m. G'day, Joey Green. How are you?
Yeah, morning, mate. Interesting weekend of football ahead, not only for the Warriors, but in local league and all around the NRL as well. So
and a lot of derbies. So there's a lot of derbies happening at the moment. Anyway, we preview Warriors versus the Dolphins. Now, Warriors, they're winning, and this is what I mean. They're winning. They're in the top four at the moment. Really potential, a real good potential this year to make playoffs. But the Dolphins, if any team has been a banana skin team for anyone in this, has been the Redcliffe Dolphins.
Yeah, the Dolphins are a really funny side to read. Like they struggled against Parramatta last week, but you look across their team on paper, and they're a really good side. Like you've got a couple of Origin potential players in Hamisola fullback Tom Gilbert in the second row. No doubt if Herbie Farnworth was if Herbie Farnworth was an Australian, he'd probably be in the mix for Origin as well. So a really weird side to call. They've been a bit up and down this season, but like you said, the Warriors are—they're just winning regularly. They're not winning pretty, but they're getting the 2 points week in week out. And when you look at the two sides they've lost against, you know, the Raiders in week one, I think they just got caught up in the Vegas light, and then Melbourne Storm, who have put some cricket scores on multiple teams this year, so they're not really wins that could have or games that the Warriors could have gone into, but they're playing some really good football at the moment, and I'm liking to see that Leka Halasima holds on to his starting spot in the second row, so it's going to be interesting to see how Murata Nukore is used off the bench tonight.
I must admit, Leka Halasima, you know who he reminds me of, and the comparisons in him and Big Ali Laititi, their games are very, very similar.
Yeah, very dynamic back rower, full of energy. And he's been doing it for a couple of seasons now in the lower grades for the Warriors as well. He's been, a very highly regarded junior, and it's great to see him not only get an opportunity, but now that he's starting in the side and playing 80 minutes for the last couple of weeks as well, it's really exciting for many Warriors fans to see his development. And when you look at the bench, you know, you've got the likes of Dimitri Vaimonga and Jacob Laban, and the rumours going around that another Warriors junior in Tanis Dallas-Smith will get a debut tonight. So you've got a lot of Warriors juniors coming through at the moment, not only from Auckland but from down in Canterbury as well. So, you know, you look at this Warriors side of 2-3 years to come, they could be, you know, scattered with Warriors juniors, which is a great sign for the club going ahead.
Absolutely. So we move on to the Friday night game, Eels 28, Knights 6. I have to say the Brown-Moses combination. Dylan Brown, you know, he is going to be missed once he leaves Parramatta because I felt he's just got better and better. Having Mitch Moses inside him, he's just become a better player.
Yeah, look, like great win for Parramatta, but gee whiz, the Knights love a bit of a roller coaster ride, don't they? You know, they're playing some very good football and catches, but then they showed last night that, yeah, geez, they're a really funny side to call week in, week out. Great to see the Knights debut another Newcastle junior in Fletcher Hunt, and same on the other side for Parramatta, debuting a Parramatta junior in Tony Mataele. But, great signs for Parramatta that Mitch Moses and Dylan Brown are playing good football. Zach Lomax putting his hand up for Origin again as well. So credit to Parramatta for turning up again last night. But, yeah, geez, worrying signs for Newcastle going forward.
Absolutely. And, of course, then we go to what a game this was. Bulldogs 24, Roosters 20. Now, I have to say I was very impressed with Viliama Kikau, but Matt Burton really scoring the try at the end was instrumental. Naka, you know, I felt sorry for the young winger for the Roosters who scored some incredible tries, but, you know, Matt Burton just pounded him with bomb after bomb.
Yeah, a classy win from the Bulldogs last night. It took a bit of a while to get into the game, but you can just tell that they're going to have a very deep run into the season because they just, once they got into the thick of the game and they were down a few points, they just seemed to flick a switch and they were good to go. But you look at Nwanga Niitawase then, you know, still very raw to rugby league, but, you know, he showed his talents last night and what's probably going to be the try of the season come the end of the year. And I suppose if he sticks with rugby league for the next few seasons, you know, maybe he could find himself an origin bolter come next year, or maybe even the year after.
Absolutely, you definitely would say that. Anyway, we look at the weekend's games, and of course the two games on the Saturday, as we've already covered, the Warriors versus the Dolphins, Cowboys versus Seagulls, Sharks versus Storm. Now that the Cowboys, I think, you know, the Seagulls, I thought they would have got the chocolates over the Sharks last week, but the Sharks proving one aside there. I think the Cowboys are just too good on this one up in Townsville.
Yeah, going to be really intriguing to see how the Cowboys line up tonight. Jackson Kudu moving into the 5-8 role and Tom Dearden getting his first start at the Cowboys in the halfback jersey. He was a halfback coming through, so it's not really a strange position for him. He just never has really played there for the Cowboys, so great to see Todd Payton trying something new, and same with Jackson Pudu as well. Lots of origin talk around Terry Evans, Tom Trbojevic, and his brother Jake as well, for Manly side, so whether they get into their respective origin sides, who knows, but I think I'm on the same boat with you. I think Cowboys will just be too strong in Townsville tonight.
Have to agree there, Joey. And then, of course, what a cracking one this one's going to be on Saturday night. Sharks versus the Storm. The Storm, this competition has proven to be one hell of a good competition, as it always is. But this one is one of the toughest ones to call because, you know, I know you're a Storm supporter. I'm going to pick the Sharks in this one.
Yeah, I think this one should be the game of the round. Like, we saw, you know, how capable the Storm are last week, you know, pulling out some big results. But it's typically always been done on Sunday afternoon as the Storm and their big wins, whereas they go up to Cronulla tonight, and, you know, Cronulla at home is always a pretty tough ask, and but we know that, you know, on their night, they can compete with the top teams. It's just going to have to be one of those nights where their forward pack's going to have to switch into gear. They get Tipu Talakai back tonight, who's been really good for them off the bench. And if they can all seem to fire on all four cylinders, then I think they'll get the job done. But being a Storm fan, I'd love to see my Storm fans, my Storm boys go two in a row tonight.
Absolutely. And then we go to Sunday's games. Broncos versus Dragons, Raiders versus Titans, Tigers versus Rabbitohs. Now, this first one, Broncos versus Dragons. I think the Broncos will just be too strong in this one, Joey.
Yeah, although the Broncos are sitting in seventh, so they're really up and down team at the moment. But with a big inclusion of Ezra Mann back this week, offers a bit of X factor for the Broncos in that 5-8 jersey. So I think having him back, and it's no disrespect to Ben Hunt, he's a great footballer on his day, but Ezra Mann's just a class player, and you never really know what you're going to get. So I think his addition will just be too much for the Dragons this afternoon or tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah, Raiders versus Titans. You know, the Raiders have been really in smoky form at the moment, but the Titans, if any team can upset you, are the Titans. Now, we spoke about the Knights. Obviously, Des Hasler's been under pressure, probably not as much under pressure as Adam O'Brien, and I'll tell you, I'm picking this, he'll be the first NRL coach sacked, Adam O'Brien, but the Titans, they have this ability to upset.
Yeah, I mean, if Newcastle fans love a roller coaster ride, then the Titans have been going on roller coaster rides for, you know, multiple years now. But you see the addition of Kieran Foran back into the side. You know, it's going to be interesting to see how they bring him off the bench. You know, they've got a pretty stable halves pairing, Jaden Campbell and AJ Brimson now, who aren't natural halves, but, you know, they've been getting the team by. And I think week by week they're, you know, they're getting through their work. They're not necessarily getting the wins, but they can play some good football. Raiders will probably be too strong this afternoon, and I think it'll either be a really big win for the Raiders, or it's going to be a tight one.
And then Tigers, the hapless Tigers versus the Rabbitohs. You know what? I'm picking the Rabbitohs, and I'm going to tell you this why, because Luttrell is in such hot form at the moment. You know, Luttrell, I think he's just, he's putting his hand up for Origin. That's one thing he is doing. And the Tigers, I think after last week, I think they're just, there's just that bit of struggle there at the moment.
Yeah, I suppose, I reckon all Luttrell needs to do to get himself in that New South Wales side is just get through this week, and he's bound to be that left centre for New South Wales as long as he comes through unscathed tomorrow night. So he's really crucial to that Rabbitohs side, and I think if he plays a good game of football, then the Rabbitohs will get the 2 points. However, the Tigers will need to bounce back pretty heavily after what was a pretty poor effort last weekend, although Melbourne's always a tough hunting ground for anyone. So would be good to see the Tigers get a win at home after last weekend's effort, but I think I'm going to pick the Rabbitohs to get the 3 points tomorrow.
Absolutely. And then we move on to Auckland Club Rugby League Fox Premiership. Richmond versus Bay Roskill, Marist Saints versus Manukau, Ponsonby versus Mount Albert in a bit of a derby. Now, this first one, I think Richmond probably just too good for Bay Roskill in this one.
Yeah, Richmond bounced back quite well last week after a round one loss, so they'll probably be too strong for Bay Roskill this afternoon, who like to play a bit of razzle-dazzle football, but I think Richmond are just too experienced to get the 2 points here.
Absolutely. Marist Saints versus Manukau. I think Marist Saints, Simon Iramia's team, will be just too good for Manukau.
Yeah, I think this game could go either way, to be fair. Like, Manukau on their day are a really good side. It's just going to be dependent on whether they can control their discipline on their day. They're not exactly the most disciplined side, and if they can control that, then I think they'll challenge Marist, but I think Marist should be able to get the 2 points at home.
And then Ponsonby versus Mount Albert, this one's going to be a very, very close one, mate.
Yeah, Ponsonby at home, they're a bit of an interesting package this year. Mount Albert went down to Tiaratu last week and somewhat of an upset, and, you know, Ponsonby beat Tiaratu in week one to earn the Rooprooster. So having that on the line will be a bit of an extra bonus for them at home. Who knows what we could see this afternoon. I'll stay away from making a call on that one, because I'd love to see Ponsonby hold on to the Rooprooster, but I would also not be too surprised if Mount Albert can take it off them.
Absolutely. Then these two games. Now, this one, it's a match of the round in the Fox. Papakura versus Otahuhu. Otahuhu are probably, they've recruited well. They are looking like the team to watch.
Yeah, very early favourites in the season are Otahuhu, and it's probably their toughest task that they'll face to date, in a very good public quarter side who are 2-from-2 at the moment and will want to go one better than what they did in last year's competition. So they'll be eager to take down, I guess you could say, early favourites in the competition, but going to be a really close matchup. I'd say Otahuhu will probably scrape home, but I'm not going to be surprised if Papakura do enough to get the 2 points.
Absolutely. And Tiaratu versus Point Chev. Well, Point Chev ain't the same side they have been in years, so I'm actually going to back Tiaratu in this one.
Yeah, I mean, if Tiaratu can upset Mount Albert last week, who are a very experienced side, the Mount Albert side, then, you know, who knows what they could produce this season. Point Chev, a very young side this year. When you say that, you know, Pat Tipley is probably the oldest player in that squad, and, you know, he'd be close to anywhere between 28 to 32, then, you know, there's not a whole lot of depth between him and the next players coming through. So interesting to see how they can front up week in, week out, playing against grown men for a lot of the Point Chev side. I think, yeah, it's going to be a close one. And if Tiaratu can upset them, then, yeah, geez, who knows what we could see this season from the Roosters.
Okay, we move on to Sharman quickly, because we're just going to keep moving on this one. Otara Scorpions versus Glenora, Howick versus Hibiscus Coast, Mount Albert Sharman Cup team versus Mangarewa, Waitamata versus Northcote, and Pakuranga versus Mangere East.
Yeah, look, some good matchups in the Sharman this week. I think Otara will just be too strong for Glenora, who are still trying to find their feet in the season. So they're going to be Hopefully looking for their first win, but I think Otara will be too strong. Howick, you know, probably one of their toughest matchups as well, going up against Hibiscus, who always compete in the second division, but I think it'll be the Hornets who come away with the 2 points here. And Mount Albert taking on Manurewa. Going to be interesting to see how this Mount Albert side can front up, because no doubt the boys from Manurewa have a big forward pack, and I think Manurewa will just be too strong this afternoon, and a really intriguing matchup in Waitemata taking on Northcote. Northcote, one of the stalwarts of the Shaman, and I think they'll give the Seagulls a bit of a welcome back to the Shaman Cup as well, and they'll take the 2 points back to Northcote. And Pakeranga taking on Mangere East, a really intriguing matchup here as well. Mangere East been in the Fox for a number of years, but I think Pakeranga, whilst they have a young side, I don't think they'll have enough to get the 2 points over the Hawks this afternoon.
Okay, thank you very much. Have a great weekend. Enjoy the Waz tonight. It's a great weekend of sports, mate.
Yeah, can't wait to see. Hopefully the Waz get the 2 points and Melbourne get the 2 points tonight as well. So enjoy the rest of your weekend and we'll chat again next week, mate.
Cheers, mate. Thanks a lot. That was Joey Green from Auckland Rugby League. Okay, we're just going to play a bit of music next up. We have the Pied Piper from Dunedin, Lee Piper, as we look at the sporting week.
Homegrown alligator, see you later. Gotta hit the road, gotta hit the road. The sun ain't changing the atmosphere. Architecture unfamiliar, I could get used to this. Time flies by in the yellow and green. Stick around and you'll see what I mean.
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender here on Planet FM. A quick change over while I was while Joe was on there, I was doing a bit of producing, and I have to say, not a bad job either. Anyway, this segment is brought to you by WaterSmart. Weekend mission sorted, mate. Wash the car, rinse the boat, clean the bait station, keep the wife's tomato plants happy. All with a WaterSmart tank. No water restrictions, no worries. Different sizes to suit your property. So check out watersmart.co.nz and take control today. Here to join us, and he just came in and thankfully he always helps us out. I'm not going to be insulting to him today, but I'll leave it till next week. But please welcome renowned broadcaster, all-round good guy, Lee Piper. Good morning to you.
The name WaterSmart, lad. I've just landed and I parked under a tree. My wife told me not to, but I parked, and then the birds have done poopies. I need WaterSmart to wash the car today. So
I'll tell you what, I'll give you Andrew Olson to have a pipe that will be sized for your convenience, Mr. Piper. Well, thanks so much. And thank you so much for doing this at the last minute. As you know, something fell through to me right at the last minute, so that's why the message went out late. So, yeah. Anyway, we look at the week that has been happening, and, of course, Ryan Fox, his maiden PGA win. I was talking to his father at the rugby club because he was there for a celebration, and he said all he needs is just to win. Well, he won that tournament. At the moment in the PGA championship, he has finished at 4 under, 4 behind the lead, tied for 7. You know, when Foxy wins, Lee, he goes on a bit of a good run.
Yeah, well, I had a look this morning. I thought he had blown out a little bit, but obviously he's the last 4 or 5 holes he's come back into it. But yeah, as you say, that was probably the sporting highlight. And then to get to the playoff and then chip in from where he did was magical. And he's always been there. I think the thing with him is, even when he plays in the big tournaments and he's played in a few majors, he hasn't been able to string like back-to-back-to-back rounds together. He'll have a good couple of rounds, he'll make the cut, and then he'll have a couple of blowouts where he'll be in the mix a bit like he is with the PGA, and then sort of, you know, shoot a 4 over and suddenly he's not. So it was good that he got into the mix. But I think we've talked about this a bit on the show before. He's a bit of an unsung hero, I think, because when you have a look this is why we debate the Lydia Ko. Like,
don't go there.
It's so difficult on the PGA to even get your tour card. And there is a lot of great golfers that come through via the American system, which is obviously, you know, rock star good. So for him to break into there, not only break in, but to win, you know, he does join, you know, some legends of the game in New Zealand. And so, you know, and he's just a likable bloke, his father's a good guy, Grant, so obviously his upbringing has been good, and so, yeah, he's one of the good guys in New Zealand sports, so I think everybody was pretty pleased to see that one.
Probably when you look at him, probably it's in the genes with his, not only his father being the great Grant Fox, but his maternal grandfather being Merv Wallace, who was a former New Zealand cricketer. So, yeah, absolutely in the genes, and it's great because he needed that for his confidence. Hey, during the week on Wednesday, 30 years ago, we were talking the America's Cup is now New Zealand's Cup. Now, I have to say, I'm going to give congratulations to some of the people I usually don't, to people like Guy Havelt for the interviews he done, and for people like Darcy Waldegrave for the quick interviews they've done. But this moment was so significant in our country's history. You were a young man like myself, probably not as good looking, but, that's the way life is. But I have to say, this really brought the country together. I don't think we've seen nationalism like, we've never seen nationalism like this before. And, I feel, and I'm going to be straight to the point, I know times have moved on, all we seem to get is probably 10-minute segments of it on how we won this 30 years ago. There's nothing to celebrate these great moments, Lee.
No, I think, if you have a look at it, and I'm sure you've discussed it, it really kicked off in 1987 with Plastic Fantastic, really, and Michael Fay and his challenge really brought it to light for New Zealand. And I think probably the Australians did us a favour because they had taken the cup off Dennis Connor, and so that kind of brought it down under and put it more in the spotlight. And then, of course, they lost it to Dennis Connor in 87 as well. But I think from there, it just kind of built. But what we all remember about that was obviously the Peter Blake and the Red Sox. And I think it was the Red Sox that united New Zealand. It was a commonality from a marketing perspective that just took on, didn't it? It took a life of its own. And we clearly had the best boat at San Diego in 95 by a long way. And with Coote and Butterworth, they were household names. And it was, I was 26 at the time, 27 at the time. So, yeah, it was a great thing in 1995. And, of course, we didn't win the World Cup that year. We should have had a great year because we lost to South Africa. So it was full of ups and downs. But, yeah, I think it's when you look at where it was then and where it is now, and the change of it, I don't think it's changed for the better. It's become very... And to be fair, we won it, obviously, again in 2000, and then Coote's jump ship, and we took Lingy, and kind of the rest is history. But I think it was very New Zealand, wasn't it? The big moustache and Tom Schuckenberg and Butterworth and Coote's and the whole thing, and then a young Dean Barker coming on to sail that last race in New Zealand, sort of the handing over, and then it kind of went pear-shaped from there.
It was
I just think it's just disappointing, I think, that it's ended up, and now we've got the news that Peter Burling's off the boat, Blair Tuke's staying, but it just...
And it's off to Italy, and it's going to be in Italy, yeah.
And it's in Italy, and to be honest with you, it's Formula One on steroids, and it's great, but it's not, to me, and I know absolutely nothing about yachting or boating in terms of the craft of it, but it just looks like, to me, yep, I mean, when you get guys on the boat who are cyclists... or Hamish Bond, they're not really sailors, are they? They're just athletes, and great athletes that they are, and Hamish Bond will go down as one of New Zealand's best athletes of all time. It's just lost a bit of that gloss.
You know what, I think we've lost connection. 1995, I was just going to say, it was this Kiwi as a guy, Peter Blake, remortgaged his house so he could pay the entry fee to enter the boat. He went round, Red Sox, the whole lot. It felt that all of us had a connection to that, Lee. And this is what...
Yeah.
I look at it today. Yeah, people watch it, people get excited, but we're not invested as we used to be. In 1995, everyone was invested, everyone was a race, whether you're a sailor in Auckland or a cow cocky in Gore, everybody knew about America's Cup.
Yeah, they did, and sailing's not a sport that unites us because it's obviously A, it's expensive, and B, whilst we're a water country, it's very much in Auckland, the harbours of Auckland. They had sailing in Dunedin, but you just about get blown to smithereens, same in Wellington. So it did bring us together, and it was a great time for the country, and I think Peter Blake was such a likeable guy, and then you had the young Coots and Butterworth who were the rock stars, not dissimilar to probably Blair Tuke and Pete Burling, but yeah, it did bring everybody together. But I think, to my point, I think it's lost it. We've debated on the show
many, many times.
we've defended the cup. We're defending the cup. And so, you know, how does that work? So I just think the fact that it's not a New Zealand is a shame.
Absolutely. You know, I hate to say there's a real lack of vision, I have to say, just generally in New Zealand. But anyway, big Saturday. What a big Saturday if you're a couch potato. Unlike you, both of us, we have our community duties, which is going down to our rugby club because we're not in trouble. But there's ANZ netball, there's the Warriors at 5, there's Super Rugby, Blues, Moana versus the Blues, and then Auckland FC. This is a huge weekend.
Yeah, it is. ANZ Premiership kicked off last week. Probably predictable results with how I thought the Steel might have got up. They were leading the tactics at one point, and they have probably been the rock star movers in the off-season in regards to players. But, you know, the pulse out the blocks looks pretty good, and the Mystics had a comprehensive win as well. So it'll be interesting to see how this week's round of games goes. The Warriors are going to be interesting, aren't they? Because
yeah, this game's a banana skin game, Blake.
Yeah, 100%. This is a game they should win all day long, but you never know. But look, they started off the season, that first game when they were in Vegas. I think they've seen too much time down on the strip and at the pokies and not enough time on the field because they got wiped. And we all shook our heads and said, oh, God, this isn't going to be there. But and they bounced back apart from that drubbing at the hands of Melbourne, it might have been. They've been pretty good. And, you know, they guts to that. I watched that game last week. And again, that could have been a game that they would have lost. 14-0, went 14-0. And they took the extra at the right time. 10 minutes to go, you get in front, and then you hang on, and that's what they did. So, you know, they've got some players coming back. Now, there's a team that unites a country from, you know, Gore to Auckland as well. So, yeah. And then Auckland FC, they continue on, hopefully they're, you know, winning ways, and they've been absolutely probably the sporting story of 2025 in regards to their performance. New to the league, just created a fan base out of nothing. Won their opening half a dozen games and then went from there. So, yeah, they've been amazing as well. So lots to sit on the couch with, but as you say, club rugby first and foremost, my friend.
Absolutely.
The heartbeat of New Zealand.
Absolutely. And who have your mob got today?
We're at home at Shark Park today. We're taking on Zingaree, and again, it could be a banana skin game for us. There's a lot of injuries. I just got off the plane. Obviously, I was at the Highlanders, and there's a lot of walking wind in there. Guys in moon boots, guys on crutches. So, they're going to limp to the finish line as well.
Yeah, well, Fabian didn't get injured. That was the main thing.
No, I've spoken to him. If we had 14 more like him, the Islanders would be right there. But they just didn't get the job done. I felt for them in the end because really, when they got that turnover penalty with a couple of minutes to go, you know, good teams just kick it out, create a couple of pods, wind the clock down, kick it out, win the game. So, good for the Hurricanes to keep them in it. Or at least, you know, the Islanders were. Were there or thereabouts in the game, but, you know, disappointing that they couldn't get the job done.
Yep, absolutely. And just to let you know, our mob, Eden, have got Maris. So at about 4:25, 4:30, there will be white smoke coming out of 225 Sandringham Road, Ribblehurst Park, and it won't be because of a Maris victory or a new pope or someone vaping. It'll be because it's a miracle at Ribblehurst. Eden will win.
Up the Marist.
What? You will not be welcome in. You know, I've invited you to my rugby club. You will not be welcome in if you start doing stuff like that, you know.
The Catholics have got a new pope, so we stick together, the Marist boys. I'll be too strong for your lot today.
No. I'm not listening to that. No. Anyway, you have a good weekend, Lee, and we will catch up next week. Of course, you're on holiday very soon, aren't you?
Yes, heading off to New York for a few weeks, and I'll be at the Yankees, and if the Knicks can get up over the Celtics in their first home game is at Madison, but I won't be going to that because I see the tickets are $2,500 US each.
Oh, you've got enough money. You've got more money.
I won't be paying that for a ticket to there. So, no, I'll be, I won't be, and the time zone's no good for me there, so I'll be incomprehendo, but I'll look forward to reporting back on the sporting Yankee Stadium and the sporting world that is the US, because it's a different
It certainly is, mate. It certainly is. Well, you have a good rest of the weekend, a good trip. Hopefully we can catch up in next week some point, and we'll just maybe catch up and have a cup of tea.
Look forward to a cup of tea. Goodbye now.
Bye. That was Lee Piper. Brilliant. Okay, next up we're going to do a bit of football with former All White Tom Doyle.
nothing to show. And the walls kept tumbling down in the city that we love. Great clouds all over the hills, bringing darkness from above. But if you close your eyes, does it almost feel like nothing changed at all?
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Review, and this segment has been brought to you by Robert Thompson of Barford and Thompson's in Epsom. Robert Thompson is extremely professional and expert knowledge, and gives great advice for people selling, buying, or looking to get onto that Auckland housing market. He will give you attention to detail and has strong business acumen. So Robert's number is 021-737-949, or you can email Robert at r.thompson@barfords.co.nz. So the big guy is away. The big guy's away having a bit of Seamus time. Hope he's with his family down in the bay. So we've got a good replacement. He is former All Whites, former Wellington Phoenix defender, Tom Doyle. Good morning to you, mate.
Good morning, mate. How you going?
Yeah, good. Hey, listen, tonight's game, Auckland FC versus Melbourne Victory. Whoa. You know, what do they need to do? Obviously, we want them to win. Obviously, a draw's not bad, even a 1-0 loss. We do not want to be in the same situation that Western United are in at the moment against Melbourne City.
I think you're bang on there. Looking at Melbourne City last night demolishing Western United shows what finals footy can do to teams, really. If Auckland can keep that worst-case still one-goal deficit and come home and be able to turn that around, I think that's a good result. Obviously, a draw or win will put them in perfect stead to make it all the way through. But then again, just the way Auckland play, you know, having to chase a game if they go 2-3 down, it does make that task challenging for them. So, I mean, a win would be great, but if they can just really, really keep the goal scoring to a minimum with Melbourne, especially away from home, I think they'll be in good stead for that finals.
Because where you look at it, and you being a defender, their defence is brilliant. You know, you look at it, Hiroki Sakai, you look at the former Nando Pineke, Francis de Vries really has, you know, he has been a revelation, and he's rejuvenised his career with Auckland FC. And of course, Dan Hall, very much an unsung hero in that back four, but you also have experience in Tommy Smith. But the midfield for Strata, I think he's probably been the buy of the season.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. For me, the Auckland FC backline has been the best in the league. And the recruitment that's gone into that, putting that backline together, has been second to none. Players out the gate, like you just mentioned, the Freeze. I mean, as a former left back, watching him up and down the sideline, not only gives me anxiety about my lungs, but it's a joy to watch. And he's getting so involved in the attack going forward, not just in that backline. I know they get a lot of credit for their defensive roles, but if you're watching week in, week out, delivering into the penalty spot and creating attacks for the team, it's been impressive. And then, like you said, with Fastrada coming in there, he breaks down the play, and he just adds an extra layer of defence for Auckland, especially in the back end of games when they prefer to sit back a bit deeper once they're a goal ahead and not park the bus as such, but definitely protect the goal a bit more. So they work in cahoot well, and then obviously Paulson at the back. No words needed for him and how good he's been this year.
Yeah, because when you look at it, like Paulson, you know, when they name the A-League team of the season, you're probably talking possibly at least four players, and you probably will be talking Paulson, Francis de Vries, Hiroki Sakai, and you're probably talking Louis Verstrada. But, you know, Gassumo May, Ben Outstanding, Moreno, they've really brought together a good team, and there's a lot of those Kiwi boys have played really, really well. So I think it's going to be an interesting time. But let's hope that, you know, a win, if we had a Western a Melbourne City win like this, it would be fantastic, because over 20,000 tickets have been sold at this stage to Go Media Stadium for next Saturday.
Yeah, it's going to be incredible. I mean, it's been like that all season. It's just been an absolute hype down at the park, and everyone seems to be getting behind it. There's a buzz around the city as well. I know that they're shutting down Britomart pretty much to support all the fans that want to get behind the team and watch it. I'll be in studio with Sky Sports, kind of giving a bit of a rundown of the game tonight as well. But, I mean, it's just a buzz. You feel it as well, right? It's all around the city, and everyone wants his team to do so well and make it all the way to the finals.
Absolutely, and of course, when you look at it, they've really got the city humming. Hey, we might as well talk a bit of Northern League, and I'll run through it because I've been following it, and it's been like a roller coaster ride. So, the games for today: Mangarewa versus West Coast Rangers. Now, just to let you know, Mangarewa really in the relegation zone, likely to be relegated. So, I think, you know, when we look at it, West Coast should be too strong. Fencibles versus Tauranga. You know, I looked at this game, Tom, and I think, you know, this Tauranga have been a really revelation this season, but Fencibles there. But this one, Eastern Suburbs versus Birkenhead, number one versus number two. Now, you played Northern League, you played National League, but this, you know, Eastern Suburbs, you know, they can have one bad season, but they tend to come back, don't they?
Yeah, they do. I mean, that's definitely the game to watch, isn't it, down at Meadows? It's the top of the table clash. Obviously, we've seen Auckland City dropped back a little bit, so this is an opportunity for one of these two teams to really run away a little bit. I mean, Birkenhead have won 6 out of 9 games, and same with Eastern Suburbs, so they're definitely the outliers in terms of quality in the league. But Eastern Suburbs, you're dead right, they up and down, but some of the young players they bring through that club has been incredible. We've seen it, you know, people jump to the professional from that team, players like Tim Payne. So, look, I'm expecting a Birkenhead win there, if I'm being honest.
Yeah.
I think it'll be a great watch nonetheless.
Auckland United versus Western Springs. Auckland United, they've had a bit of an indifferent start with Emilio Tade there. I think they're going to be too strong there, Tom.
Yeah, and it's Emilio Tade. Yeah, I actually played with him a lot at Auckland City, and we know the quality he brings, especially in this league, as a lethal goal scorer. So, I think I'm with you on that one. I think we'll see some goals from Emiliano as well.
Absolutely, and then we look at it. Auckland FC Reserves versus Bay Olympic, your old club. Well, Auckland FC, it's a very, very young side, but I'm actually going to go for the side away, and I think I'm going to pick a Bay Olympic win.
I think there's going to be a lot of hype around the club at the moment as well. Maybe that will, leak its way down to that reserve team as well and give them a bit of spring in their step. But I think that'll be a close game. I'm picking that one as a draw. Obviously a bit further down the table with that clash, but Bay Olympic, my former club, I can never bet against them, but I do see a draw coming out of that one.
And you're probably not unaware, we always say, myself and Seamus always say, sitting on the fence, brought to you by Tantalise. So, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. East Coast Bays versus Auckland City FC. Now, Auckland City FC, in a few weeks' time, will be in America for the World Club Cup. Now, really, they've had the Honiara hangover, as they call it, but, you know, this game, I can say East Coast Bays, they're not that far off there, and I'm going to be saying something to you, brought to you by Tantalise. I'm going to sit on the fence and call this a draw.
Yeah, this is a big game for Auckland City. Actually, they've obviously had a really tough 3 weeks, as you mentioned, the Honiara hangover, which seems to be a constant, doesn't it, when people come back after winning that league. But if they don't turn it around quickly, they're really going to struggle going into that FIFA Club World Cup, I think. They'll be working all week to turn this around as soon as possible. You always want to go into tournaments winning a game. So I feel like they're going to go on with a mentality that it's a bit of a finals for them. They need to turn it around quickly before they head away for that FIFA Club World Cup. So I'm going to pick a pretty dominant performance here from Auckland City. But time will tell.
Okay, we move on to Northern League's women's. Only one game in the weekend. It's Ellerslie versus Tauranga. I think Ellerslie too good. Oceania, OFC Women's Champions Club Champions League Women's, Auckland United versus Hariki from Papua New Guinea. This will be a close one. I'm picking Auckland United just to take the win there, but Hariki is very, very much more the Papua New Guinea women's team. So we go to the EPL. Games played this morning. Villa 2, Spurs 0, Chelsea 1, Manchester United 0. Obviously the losing teams have other things on their mind, but for Villa and Chelsea, it puts them ahead of that logjam going into for those Champions League spots.
It does. Unfortunately, I'm a Man City fan, and I'm also a Chris Wood fan, so my two guys sitting sixth and seventh, they weren't really the results I was hoping for this morning, if I'm being honest. Looking at those results and seeing Man United and Tottenham now sitting 16th and 17th, I mean, one out of the relegation zone and coming up with their Europa League final. It must be one of the, I guess, the lowest ranked finals in recent history I can remember.
Well, when I looked at it, they asked Arsene Wenger, and of course Arsene has never been a fan of either club, so he basically said no, he doesn't believe it's right, but this is the way you get through. And both those teams, one of those teams could be playing Champions League. That's the reality of it, Tom. I just cannot believe it. Anyway, we move on to the EPL weekend, and we're going to do these three games at a time. Okay, Everton versus Southampton, West Ham versus Nottingham Forest, Brentford versus Fulham. The first one, Everton versus Southampton, Tom. You know, Southampton have had came back up and they're going to go straight back down.
Yeah. It's a bit of a dead rubber, isn't it? Those teams at the bottom of the table, we've known for a while that they're all going down. So I guess players now are simply just playing for contracts next year and where they're going to be. So there will be a lot of turmoil in those clubs at this moment. So I don't really see anyone picking up points in that bottom three in the next few weeks.
So Everton over there. Nottingham Forest, West Ham versus Nottingham Forest. Nottingham Forest need a win here. No two ways about it. If they want to play Champions League, they need a win. A draw, I don't believe, is going to be good enough. They will play European football, but, they want to be in Champions League. They may play, but it could end up being in Europa or in Conference League.
Yeah. Well, they're sitting on 62 points and sixth place, or Chelsea are 66 at the moment. So if they pick up a win today, it really does drive a bit of hope into that Champions League football. And as I mentioned before, there probably isn't a Kiwi in New Zealand that wouldn't want to see Chris Woods in the Champions League next season. So I'm going to back Nottingham Forest because I want them to win so bad. There you go.
Good man. And Brentford versus Fulham. Well, you know what? I'm going to sound rude here. I just see that as a one all draw all day.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bit of a nail game, isn't it?
There's a lot of these games. There's just so many of these games there, Tom. I can tell you that right now. So we move on to the rest of some of these other games that are coming in on Sunday. Leicester versus Ipswich, and Arsenal versus Newcastle. Pretty critical. Well, both of them are probably in there, but they're probably more vital for Newcastle. But Leicester, Ipswich, I can see this just being a win for Leicester.
Potentially. I'm not backing those bottom three teams to get any points, really. So,
well, it's second to bottom versus bottom.
Yeah, I know. So you're probably dead on. It's a draw.
Arsenal, Newcastle. Honestly, Tom, this one is probably more important for Newcastle because, they don't want to be going into the last day under pressure.
That's exactly right. Yeah, they need to pick up points as well. I'm loving the way they play. I mean, it's been incredible this season, hasn't he? He's one of the players above Chris Wood on the goal scoring tally. He's been one of the best players in the world for me this season as a striker. So that is crucial for them. They really want to make daylight now between that fourth place chase for the Champions League football. So I'm going to back Newcastle to win this. I've got a few friends that support them, so I'll jump on that bandwagon with them.
Absolutely, and then we have a look at the other games, Brighton versus Liverpool. Then we also look at, then this Palace versus Wolves. Well, I'm going to say the Brighton-Liverpool game, I think Brighton will win that. Liverpool really don't care because their season's over. Palace versus Wolves, I can see that being a draw, Tom, because I think Palace have got other things on their mind. And the final one, well, I'm going to say this right now. I know you're a Manchester City supporter. I know how to pick my football correspondents. One's a Liverpool supporter, one's a Manchester City. You take on, and I'll give you a warning, please don't say if Auckland FC make the final, our sugar daddy, Big Bull Foley's AFC Bournemouth.
Well, there you go. I get a lot of stick for it, actually, but my grandparents from Manchester City, so it was passed down to generations as opposed to just jumping on board when the money started rolling in. But I back Man City every weekend. I mean, they've won 4 out of the last 5 and only drawn the last game. So to me, that's a Man City demolition.
Well, I have to say, Tom, you've done very well coming off the subs bench. Your impact has been amazing. And Seamus has got a lot of work to do, and he also owes you a few beverages as well, too.
Oh, I know.
Yeah,
we'll enjoy those, I'm sure.
Okay, on that note, Tom, you have a fantastic weekend. Thank you so much for making yourself available. Enjoy the weekend, enjoy the game tonight, and up the port.
Let's go. Awesome, mate. Thank you very much.
Cheers, mate. Thanks, bye.
Cheers, bye.
That was brilliant, Tom Doyle. So next up, we're going to talk a bit of America's Cup history with Joey Allen and hopefully Jeremy Scandalbury. Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekender. Wow, 30 years ago, unbelievable. You know, one of our great moments, not only in sports, but probably in our country's history. And we're going to celebrate these moments, and I always enjoy shows like these where we get to celebrate them. We have the pleasure of having two very, very crucial members of that Team New Zealand side, Joey Allen, the bowman, Jeremy Scandalbury, they were part of this team. So good morning, Joey. How are you, mate?
All good.
Bring back, and of course, Jeremy, I know you're out on the harbour, but geez, I'm going to say this to you right now, guys. This brings back some memories, doesn't it?
Yeah, some great memories, mate. How are you, Joe? Any fish out there?
Yeah, great. Yeah, no, it's a beautiful day out here. We're just off the top of Coromandel, and we've got gannets diving and dolphins and whales out here. So it certainly makes you appreciate the Hauraki Gulf and the country we live in, that's for sure.
Absolutely. And I'm just going to say, how did you guys hold up the day after catching up for a few drinks and a meal to celebrate the 30th?
It was a fantastic night, honestly. It was, yes, it's just special to see the guys. And, you know, we've all aged in different ways. But, yeah, very, very cool.
Good. And just, I'm going to start off with you, Jeremy. Now, you were involved in the New Zealand Challenge under Michael Fayer in 1987 and 1992. You joined the Team New Zealand Challenge in 1995. What was so different from this challenge compared to the previous two challenges?
Well, yeah, well, you missed out the K-boat. You remember the big one?
Oh, yeah. Cat versus a dog. Yes.
That's the one. Well, I think like you say, what you got to realise is when we won it in 95, it took nearly 10 years of trying. You know, we got close in 87 and got knocked out by Dennis Connor. Obviously, we had the K-boat that was caught up in the courts and that was a bit of a mismatch, and then we got close again in 92. So by the time we won it in 95, it wasn't like it was our first crack at it. It had taken a lot of sweat, hard work, and a lot of learnings. We'd made, obviously, just about got there, but we'd made some mistakes along the way with our boats and bits and pieces, so we were really determined to get it all right. America's Cup's a complicated game, and if you just get one little thing wrong, you miss out. So I think that made the achievement a lot, a hell of a lot fulfilling after 10 years of finally winning it.
Absolutely. And Joey, just some of your experiences, like you were brought in as the bowman, you'd had some America's Cup experience, but just coming into this, and of course we look at this boat, and you know, both of you would say that, and one thing Sir Peter Blake always had, he always had a close lot of friends around him, like the Ross Blackmans, and of course he had Alan Sefton. Now initially we didn't realise how fast this boat was.
No, the boat was created by people like Jeremy. I was actually doing the Round the World race when the boat was being constructed. But Jeremy, you had a massive part of putting that together, and a huge team that just built, as you say, an absolute rocket ship. And the boat was, the guys built it, the guys created it. But you're right, mate, the boat was fast.
Yeah, Jeremy, just when you look back on it, because there was the old thing, because, the challenge was pretty low-key, and, of course, I think Sir Peter Blake and the crew, they had to keep this under wraps before going into the regatta. I think there was one saying that there was rumours around the press saying that the boat's no good, and I think Alan Sefton probably wound up being the media man for Team New Zealand, but this really, we came under... It really was low-key, and probably the expectations of the country probably wasn't as high as it has been in the past, but that boat, we had to keep things under wrap.
Yes, well, that was part of the strategy. We sailed the boat in Auckland, or NZL 32 in Auckland against NZL 20, which is that red boat from the 92 campaign, and it was at that point that we realised that we might have something special here, so... You know, what you got to do is, America's Cup is a cat and mouse game. Yeah. So you had to, we decided to keep it under wraps. And we actually started off the round robin using our slower boat. It was only marginally slower, but it was NZL 38. And we used that first. And then we.
Jeremy? We might have just lost Jeremy there, so. Just, we'll just keep talking. Joey, just when, are you there, Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm here. I can hear you.
Yeah, yep. I know. I just thought we'd just lost you, but just getting back to what you were saying, of course, then you would have, did you use that in the Louis Vuitton Cup, NZL 32?
Yes, correct, yep. Yeah, I think we brought it out only in the last round robin, and we used 38 all through the previous round robin, so... It was still a fast boat, but it didn't quite have the same.
Yeah. And then when we talk about the round robin, Joey, there was one moment within that where, you know, Team New Zealand was taking on the Australian Challenge. The Australian Challenge came very highly rated, led by America's Cup hero John Bertram. But you were down below on doing your job as a bowman, and on that day when the Australian boat fell apart.
Yeah, mate, it was actually the roughest day we had. It wasn't that windy, but the sea state was, you know, we were racing in the Pacific, and the sea state was a very, very aggressive sea state. And look, to be honest, Jeremy was on deck and I was down below. To be honest, you're asking the wrong man. I had no view of what happened, but I just remember coming up onto the foredeck and seeing the expression on everybody's faces. And it was, maybe Jeremy can tell the story, but oh my God, it was a very, very scary moment, because from what the guys saw, the outcome didn't look too promising for the Australians. Maybe Jeremy can tell the story better than me.
Yeah, well, can you guys hear me? I'm just
Perfect.
Well, Joey, we'd actually come around the bottom mark, and I think it was the last one we'd beat to get to the top mark, and then to get downwind to win the race. And it had been a pretty close race earlier on with the Australians, and we'd come around the bottom mark, and it was pretty fresh. It was a lot. It was a big storm that come through San Diego, so it was a lot windier and rougher than it normally was. And Joey was downstairs packing the spinnaker, and all of a sudden this sort of unfolded. You know, all of a sudden the boat sort of stopped. The Australian boat stopped to a couple of hundred yards to leeward of us, and all of a sudden the rig went soft, and you can see the forestay waving around, and then. And then you just all of a sudden notice that the bow started to meet the stern, and the boat started to break up through the middle. And I remember ducking down the little hatch that we had on the top and saying, "Joe, you wouldn't believe this. Australian boat is sinking." And he said, "Bullshit." And jumped up on deck, and he couldn't believe his eyes.
Oh, unbelievable. And, of course, you know, I tell you something, you know, in times like these, you know, you're competitive sailors, but you're all mates at the end of the day, and you would have known a few Kiwis that were on that Aussie boat as well, too.
Yeah, we knew all of them. And we were racing against them relentlessly in the match racing tour, and basically, I just remember when we pulled out of the race just to show respect, and we got radios and we got commed up to the outside world. And when we heard the news that everyone was safe, the Aussie sinking joke started pretty quickly.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. We actually had our chase boats over there pulling their crew out of the water, and I think we ended up with about five of their crew on one of our chase boats. So, we're obviously very concerned. You know, when something like that happens, you know, it's very easy to lose a life, you know. It happens so quickly.
Absolutely. And of course, then Peter Blake, the head of the syndicate, he was on the boat. So, and it was probably crucial to have Blakey on there, because he could see if there needed to be repairs, et cetera, done. But the rumour had it that, the washing hadn't been done, and the only things, Blakey could find was his red socks, which were brought to him at Christmas by Lady Pippa Blake for Christmas. Now, that became legendary. Hello.
Yeah, well, they were his lucky red socks, and he didn't go sailing without them. I think there was something that deemed them incredibly lucky. Can you remember that story, Joey? I can't remember exactly what that was.
It's all getting vague now. But you know, just whatever Blakey thought was important was important, and we were all behind him with all that, you know, that sort of stuff. We can be a strange crew.
You can be you're definitely hard cases. That's one thing you can say. So you strolled through the Louis Vuitton. You lost one race when Peter Blake wasn't on the boat because obviously a bit of an injury. And of course the calls came out from New Zealand. We have to get him back on there. And then we came to the America's Cup final. Well, America's Cup being what it is, Stars and Stripes won the Defenders Series to defend it for the US. But we're given the young America boat because it was a lot faster. But in the end, you know, it was so nervous, and we were here in New Zealand, and we were so nervous, but after two races, we knew something good was going to happen.
Yeah, you don't tend to think about it like that, do you, Jiro? You just think about the day ahead of you, and you don't tend to look into the future too much. But it was a crew that had a lot of confidence in themselves, and we knew we were going to be very, very difficult to beat. We knew that, eh, Joe?
Yeah, well, yeah. You know, I think we're very apprehensive because we'd got so close before. And, you know, you never say never. You know, anything could happen. You could lose your rig. You'd have a rigging failure or, you know, something could happen. You know, before we'd been really close, and then we'd sort of started to get into a trend, and we'd started to lose races. But you know, we were very sort of very confident that we had put the work in, we had the machine. It's not like the America's Cup today where you.
Hello.
Yeah, I think we've lost
Jeremy. Yeah, I think we may have just lost him there, but what Jeremy's probably saying is the America's Cup today, Joey, it's such a different machine now compared to what when we was in 1995. But when winning race five on that day, what was it must have been a feeling not only for some of the crew of relief, but just huge celebration.
Look, we certainly don't celebrate till the job's done, but for me personally, you're right, you're correct. It was a feeling of a massive unloading of relief off your shoulders because you didn't want to be the guy that let the whole team down. You know, it was. I just remember going, oh, my God, it's over. You know, we don't have to think this anymore. We get a break. But you got to understand, we were 10 miles off the coast. And what happened was we'd just finished a 2.5-hour yacht race. And the next thing, everyone's piling on board with bottles of champagne. And it was the next thing, look, I've got to be honest with you, mate, we got hammered pretty quickly. You know, we weren't, you know, I don't think the nutritionists would do it like that today. But we were absolutely euphoric with the celebration that started minutes after we crossed the finish line, you know.
Now I've got Jeremy back because we just lost him for a moment. But I'm just going to say, Jeremy, I was speaking to John Macbeth the other day, who was there for TV, and he said, can we remind Jeremy in the euphoria and in the celebrations, you might have dropped a bit of an F bomb when you were coming back to shore.
Oh, good one, mate. Right. Good one.
Sure, I said. Yeah, I think. Everyone just relaxed.
Oh, brilliant.
They should have achieved the dream that they've been trying to do for 10 years. Fortunately, they bring these bottles of champagne on to them. So they've been sailing all day, probably a little bit of the high grading. The next moment is just great.
And, of course, you know, when you guys, you arrived home, you know, you knew it was big when you got to but when you arrived home to Auckland that day, I think half of the city was in Queen Street that day, guys. Just your memories.
Yeah, look, I was, Alan, I was in the first car up Queen Street. And you got to understand that we'd been quite alienated from the euphoria that was happening in New Zealand. We were just living in a little town in San Diego, and we just weren't thinking about, you know, the reaction from New Zealand back home. And to be in that first car going up Queen Street, it's something that I will never, ever, ever forget. It was, I honestly, words can't describe the feeling of every face covered in elation as we drove up the main street, you know, up Queen Street. It's something that'll haunt me forever.
I have to say, Jeremy, just your memories. It was just, it just felt so great. And I just arrived in Auckland, and it was just fantastic just to be in Auckland for that day. So, Jeremy, some of your memories.
Yeah, I can't see. It's my day.
Yep, Sorry, Jeremy, we can't, unfortunately, we can hardly hear you. Yeah. Sorry, you can probably hear me, but when it's probably not. Yeah, it's probably just not coming through. But I just want to say something to you two guys, you know. And, you know, this will be a day, 30 years on, you know. I hope we can do another anniversary in 10 years' time to celebrate the 40th and we're all alive and kicking. But I'm just going to say this, you know, thank you both for making yourselves available. You both are true legends. And I think, you know, when we look back, it was great times, not only for sailing, not only for sports, but for the country of New Zealand. And I've really enjoyed your chats today. There's been some great stories. Joey, thank you very much.
Thank you. Anytime, bud. Anytime.
Good. And Jeremy, mate, catch me a snapper or a kingy, and I'll give you a call. But thank you so much for making yourself available, both of you. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Cheers. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that was great, actually. Fantastic conversation. Next up, we're going to be talking to Dennis Harvey, who was the head of production for the America's Cup in 1995, and my good old mate, John McBeth, who was on the ground in San Diego in 1995. So, we'll just play a bit of music.
The America's Cup is now New Zealand's Cup, and for over...
Welcome everyone back to the Sports Weekend. A Tim Finn song. They had no idea it couldn't be done well. You know, we look back on those great memories. Here to join us, the legendary broadcaster, and he was in San Diego on the ground, my good friend John, to be or not to be, John McBeth, good morning to you.
Good morning, Hammond. 30 years, can't believe it.
Oh, mate. it hasn't time flown. And a man that was not only a fantastic TV producer, also a documentary maker. You know, he'd done a brilliant documentary on Sir Peter Blake, the boy from Bayswater. And it was a great pleasure to have him on. And, you know, not only his TV production made the America's Cup coverage world-class, not only with the commentaries of the great PJ Montgomery, but also the graphics of Sir Ian Taylor. Good morning to Dennis Harvey. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, I have to say, guys, this 30 years ago, it seems so long ago, doesn't it? It just feels so weird. But when we looked at it, like for you, John, I just professionally, your preference would have been to be going to South Africa, but you were asked to be in San Diego. But when we looked at it, the build-up was so damn low-key from Team New Zealand, because the previous challenge there had been so much frivolity of going on that we're going to win the Americas Cup in 87 and 1992. This one had a low key, but I think the crucial thing was the guy leading it, Sir Peter Blake, was so essential, and he kept things grounded. Starting off with you, John.
Well, I think you're right. Yeah, you can never underestimate the influence of Sir Peter Blake. And Dennis, who was my boss over there and the head of so much of the television coverage, both then and in future years, we saw so much of that, didn't we, Dennis? The influence that Peter Blake had, not only on the New Zealand crew, but also on outside influences, you know, not so much sponsors, but certainly an influence on people who visited on New Zealand, on the coverage. And of course, you know, we can't underestimate either the fact that he wore red socks one day. So sort of a fluke, but it just took off. And while Eamon Dennis said it seems a long time ago, it doesn't seem 30 years ago, does it,
Dennis?
No, it certainly doesn't. And I think, you know, going back to Sir Peter, what he did is he brought a calmness to that campaign. I'd been there in 1992, you know, and with all the protests and the, you know, the issues around the bowsprit and the changing of the helmsman at the last minute and everything, I think what Peter brought was just a calmness and a quiet determination that, you know, we don't need to make a lot of noise. We just got to get on and do our jobs, and everybody's got to do their part. And if we all do it well, we've got a chance of success. And it was quite a different attitude in contrast to those two campaigns.
When you looked at it,
he had he was such a fine figure of a man too, wasn't he? You know, his physique helped. And and I think, you know, often during those early stages, there was a comment, Peter Blake's not the best sailor for that position, but it soon became apparent that he was indispensable for his influence on the boat.
Yeah, the only race they lost was the race he wasn't on the boat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Just when you looked at it, Dennis, you had and with Dennis and John, both of you, you know, one thing about Peter Blake, and I think he was very inclusive to especially when it came to New Zealand, because he went round there, he got the sponsors and everything, remortgaged his house to pay for the entry fee. But Dennis, you guys had access to that crew at crucial times.
Yeah, I mean, within the, you know, the bounds of secrecy, we had made a determined effort to really say that the sailors should be treated like the All Blacks, and we wanted every New Zealander, and was part of our strategy for every New Zealander to be able to cite the names of all the crew. And Peter embraced that, and the whole campaign embraced that in their quiet way. I mean, they never show it overly, but, you know, I think they were pretty proud to be part of that team. So, yeah, it's just his style of leadership engendered and brought out the best in everybody, including our television crew, because, you know, we were determined to do well as much as the sailing team.
And you're right, because it was, you know, TVNZ with a broadcaster, that's who you're referring to when you say we, Dennis. We wanted to get those players' names out there, and there'd be a heck of a lot of people now listening would say, "Ah, now I remember it was Joey Allen on the bow," and you know, and they'd be able to go through, because we did promote even before the racing started, interviews and high profiles of these people. Some of them were reluctant heroes, there's no doubt about it, shied away from the publicity, but Well, you only have to think about what they were like coming in after the win on that.
And we were fortunate. TVNZ had a wee bit of influence in terms of access, because TVNZ had a very innovative sponsorship campaign called the Family of Five, and the broadcast coverage in TVNZ was very integral to that. Without TVNZ, that sponsorship package would never have come together. TVNZ generously provided airtime as an offset for cash input into the campaign. So that gave us a unique in, if you like, into the team, which was very helpful as a benefit to both sides.
When we look back at it, of course, we mentioned the Red Sox and, of course, the Blakey's Red Sox. And, of course, you guys were probably in San Diego, but everyone was wearing them. And, of course, there was a campaign to buy Red Sox. And, of course, in the end, I think the boss at the time was Brent Harmon at TVNZ, presented a cheque for $2 million to Peter Blake. And you know what? It kept it basically, because the money was running a bit tight for them, and that $2 million really kept that team going.
Yeah, it bought them a new mainsail for the America's Cup match, which, you know, in any America's campaign, innovating and making your boat go faster and faster is absolutely critical. You have to improve throughout the whole campaign. And that additional funds injection towards the end of campaign, I think, was not to be underestimated.
It was quite remarkable, too, that, you know, you talk about the Red Sox. That was every... You know, not every, but most individuals in New Zealand contributed to that. And, you know, there's been so much criticism of America's Cup being, you know, a rich sport for rich boys and all that sort of stuff for their toys. At that stage, it was New Zealanders, even those who'd never been on the water in a yacht at all, they all supported it. And I think a lot of that gets down to, you know, Blake, but also the TVNZ campaigns that I think the difference 30 years ago, wasn't it? There was you either watched TV1 or TV3 probably, and Sky had only just sort of entered the equation. So a totally different ball game, but it really was a, you know, when you talk about family of five with regards to the sponsors, but also New Zealanders felt they were part of the family.
Yeah, there was buying. Yeah. There was buying
The whole TVNZ network got behind it. You know, it was the kids' programs, What Now? You know, it was the Homes program. You know, there was a range of TVNZ programs, so TVNZ could use its, if you like, its, you know, audience muscle to get that message out and engage. And it was interesting because we had no idea in San Diego how successful and how much an impact that was going to be having, because it was, you know, it was pre-internet, pre-cell phones, pre-social media. And we were quite blind to it up in San Diego. We were staggered when we sort of heard about it afterwards.
Because when you look... You go ahead, John.
you mentioned Holmes, and on that final day, you'll recall, when Dennis, when we started work at, what, 7 in the morning, and the boats were then on their long haul out to the race course, and we were all set up to go live. I think we were live at 9 o'clock in the morning over there. And we finished up at 1:30 the following morning, because news wanted us live from the Team New Zealand compound where we were at the time, and Holmes, we had to stay on till Holmes had done his thing, and we'd had, I think,
and
Dave Dobbins was playing in the background.
They did a special highlights and everything after Holmes, and they wanted John to do live crosses from the celebrations in the team base, which got increasingly rowdy as the evening went on.
Oh my word, I remember we had to actually hire a couple of guys over there. we hired a couple of guys to sort of stand on the platform that I was operating from, you know, just to stop people from getting up there and not so much making a nuisance of themselves, but they were well liquored up and enjoying themselves. It was a hell of a party. It was one of the great parties, and I was totally sober and hadn't had a drink.
But when do you look back at it? Because we go back to the fig. Obviously, we got through the great, you know, the, and I have to say, what TVNZ brought to us, they brought us the drama, and nobody does the drama best in America's Cup coverage than PJ Montgomery. But the Australian boat sinking, winning of the Louis Vuitton Cup, then we came down to the Cup, and, you know, it was really, I think, after that first race, there was so there was nervousness, but in New Zealand, there was a little bit of quiet confidence that we could finally, this could be finally our time.
Yeah, I think the, you know, if the messages we were getting, and John, you can reinforce that or not, but the message we were getting is the boat they had was significantly faster. All the data they had and all the information they had throughout the Louis Vuitton Cup, they were more than confident they had a boat that was capable of winning it. And they were helped, you know, they wanted to race against Dennis Conner, and they were helped by the fact that the disruptions within the defender team in terms of selecting the defender, you know, Dennis Conner wasn't on his Stars and Stripes boat. He'd borrowed a boat from Young America. So I think, you know, they knew if they were going to win it, they had the boat to do it, and the circumstances were such that they were in a pretty good position.
Yeah. I think New Zealand had psyched them out of it. Their toughest races were against Australia, weren't they, pretty much? And
yeah.
And in between races, in between rounds, all the other compounds were shrouded in secrecy as they made dramatic last-minute changes to try and match the New Zealand speed. And I think one of the great things out of it was that New Zealand didn't have the biggest budget by any means, and probably one of the lowest, but we had ingenuity, we had, you know, skill, we had outstanding sailing crew, without doubt. So everything appeared at the right time, and driven by Blake and Coots being outstanding, as of course there, and the rest of the team. It was a team event, no doubt about that. But we just, yeah. New Zealand just sort of took over and set the standard, and the others were faced with the task.
Yeah, and I think they had a genius in Tom Schneckenberg, who's in terms of what they'd done with the sail program and the whole design of the boat and all those kind of things. Yeah. You know, the way the relationship between the mast and the keel, you know, they just put an incredibly good package together.
When you look back at that, guys, because the previous boats had been Bruce Farr designed boats, but Blakey, who had had a good partnership, got Laurie Peterson to help design the boat. And believe me,
Laurie Davison,
not Laurie Peterson. Yes. Thank you, John. I've got so much written down. So yeah. So, but when hey, we're making a bit of a clangor, but it's not a four-letter word. But the big thing about it was, it just felt. Do you know what it felt like? To me, as an outsider looking at it, you guys had closer access than me. It felt there was just a team environment. It felt we were no longer that small fish in a big sea. We were battling way above us. And to me, you know, it not only, and I'll say this before we get to the cup and the parade, I felt this country really, for the first time in my lifetime, in 1995, first time we really saw everyone in this country buy in and really get behind this.
Mm. Oh, you're right. Absolutely. I often used to think about my parents who were in Timaru, had never been on the water at all. In fact, avoided it if they could. And for them to be able to discuss, you know, with their friends, who was doing what, and they learned so much from this sort of information that we put out. You know, education, didn't we?
Absolutely.
You know, educating non-sailors into the art of sailing, and of course, you mentioned Sarah Taylor, and how much of an impact that had.
Yeah, I mean, with the graphics, with the audio on the boats, the onboard cameras. Yeah. You know, we had a mission within our TV team. We want to bring the sport alive. It has the potential to be a really good television sport with all those elements coming together. And finally, with the evolution of the ARL, the three-dimensional graphics, the viewers could actually begin to understand it. And they knew, as you're going up a beach, somebody's ahead, they're behind, they're ahead, they're behind, they're not, you know. So it is suddenly relatable and understandable for the average person. And I think, you know, that really sent the benchmark. We had the seeds of it in 1992 when we first did the animation, but it evolved in those 3 years to the point, you know, it's now sent the benchmark for any sailing coverage.
And Dennis, so, you should be proud of it too. You should be very proud of you.
I certainly am.
Yeah, gosh, yeah. Well, we had people from around the world admiring the TVNZ coverage, without doubt. There were several awards dished out afterwards.
Yep.
Because of it, and there's no doubt, and even when you consider it, when you talk about Team New Zealand having limited budgets, and that's TVNZ did it with, you know, on a shoestring as well. It was extraordinary coverage for the time. And
we had eight people there, and ESPN had 36.
And they used to come to us and ask us how we were doing it. You know, what do you? How come you guys? You've only got eight people. You know. What we did was our own makeup.
I tell you what, you're still wearing that makeup today, John. It's brilliant. But when we think back about it now, you know, the euphoria you mentioned about that day winning the cup, but I suppose when you guys arrived back in New Zealand and just to see that parade, it was... You know, I was in Auckland, and I went right round the country. Went to Wellington, and went to Christchurch, and went to Dunedin, because this is what Peter Blake wanted. He wanted the whole country to be involved. And you know, that day in Auckland, I will never forget as long as I live.
Yeah, well, we had no idea. As you say, it was only on the day of the cup that we managed to arrange a video feed back up from New Zealand back into our TV studio, so we could finally see how it had taken off in New Zealand. We were staggered at that point, and we were pretty exhausted after it and wanted to, you know, go off and have a break and whatever. And we were told by TVNZ, no, we had to come out back on the plane with the team, and then we had to go in the parade. So, I mean, I had my two children. We've been away for, you know, nearly 6 months, and I had two children with me. I had to drop them off at the grandparents and go and stay in a hotel and do the whole parade thing. We were exhausted. We just wanted to go home. But that driving in from the airport, John, I don't know if you remember, you know, the streets were lined with people. I mean, we were just absolutely gobsmacked that
I remember being on the backs of the trucks and that sort of thing, as we and feeling very much like an imposter. Because, you know, all we'd done was talk about it and show it, but what we sort of probably failed to recognise was those people were there because of the medium that we provided for them to see and to celebrate. And, you know, those nights in those final, when we were getting, you know, calls from various yachting clubs around the country who were holding breakfasts, you know, champagne breakfasts to watch the final, and it was pretty much because of the TVNZ coverage that, you know, they were able to make it an event. People arriving in San Diego who would seek us out or seek, you know, because they couldn't get to the sailors, but they'd be hanging around and they'd arrive in San Diego off the train or wherever they were coming from wearing red socks. And we thought, what the hell's going on, you know? We weren't aware of it.
And I think that's one of the things I'm sort of particularly proud of is that, you know, by using the television medium, which we were passionate about, we enabled New Zealanders to share the experience. And that's where live sport is at its, and television at its best, is that shared live experience, you know, for celebrations or not. You know, there's no more powerful medium still.
Yeah, you're right. Do you remember, Dennis, that after the cup was won, we then shot off to New York, didn't we? Which sounds easy, doesn't it? But flying from San Diego to New York, to the New York Yacht Club, where the cup was presented to, that was something stunning in itself. And I've got only vague memories of that because we were also knackered.
And I'm, you know, I take my hat off to, you know, Jane Dent, you know, who worked tirelessly. You know, we had one news reporter there, you know, and Jane had been there doing preview programs in the months leading up to the cup, you know, news reports every day. It didn't stop. And she was out on the water with PJ every day to do news stuff, you know. And again, you know, one news did a remarkable job again in covering the cup. So, you know, I think we should certainly recognise Jane's efforts.
Absolutely.
An American cameraman and a sound man and one reporter, you know, it was just staggering.
Just in closing, guys, you know, when we look at this event now, we talk about World Cups, we talk about Olympic moments, but as far as not only in sports in New Zealand, but I think in history of New Zealand, because this really defined us as a country, this moment. We were no longer small. The country of at that time, 3.5 million, just a small little underdog. We were New Zealand and we were on the world stage. Your thoughts, John?
Well, it certainly made an impact. You know, as a sort of a sport that was dominated by a handful of sports, a country that was dominated by a handful of sports, you know, rugby and so on, to being in San Diego, where people were saying, because everyone sails in New Zealand, don't they? You're just a couple of islands surrounded by sea. I said, no, hardly anyone sails in New Zealand. Oh, really? Well, how come you're so good at it? Yeah, it was it made a huge impact, and went on to make a huge impact, particularly when the Cup went to Europe. I think, you know, that was, while it wasn't everyone's delight that it went to Europe, when it went to Europe and they saw how New Zealand could compete over there, and what it did for Auckland, of course, and the two subsequent America's Cup campaigns there, it 1995 was hugely significant, historic.
Absolutely.
And Dennis and I were pleased to be there.
Dennis, just close us out. We've just got a little bit of time left, but 30 seconds. Just your final thoughts, Dennis.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, when you work in television all your life, and I mean, I'm still working in television, to be part of an historical moment in your country is special. You know, you don't get those opportunities very often. You know, I've now produced the sailing at six Olympics, and I've covered New Zealanders winning sailing medals. But it's not the same to be, if you like, behind the scenes showcasing New Zealand making history.
Thank you very much, gentlemen. I both enjoyed that show, and it's great to talk about these memories.
Your language on